Hi, welcome to Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, your monthly potpourri of literary snacks for the mind and interviews. I'm Sandy Harper here with my co-host Dick Reichman, and our special guests today are Andromeda Romano-Lux and Deb Vanassi, right? No.
Close, Vanas.
And these two guys are partners in crime in a new endeavor. Maybe first you tell us a little bit about what that's all about.
So our new endeavor is called 49 Alaska Writing Center. And if you'd like a little background,
sure.
I'll talk about how we got started. I didn't know Andromeda Romano-Lux. I'd seen her books, and we each had started blogs. This was a couple of years ago. About 18 months ago, we merged our blogs after having met for the first time just about 3 weeks prior. So we collaborated mostly online and continue to do so, even though we both live in Anchorage. So that was 18 months ago. About 6 months ago, we started talking about an Alaska Writing Center. And we did a lot of planning, a lot of strategizing. We had 1 year, 3 year, 5 year plans. Andromeda went to the convention of AWP in Denver that she might want to talk a little more about later.
What is
AWP? AWP, Alaska Writing. Alaska. Everything's Alaska to me.
I believe it's Associated Writers and Writing Programs.
Yes.
They call it AWP.
AWP. Yeah. So she went to the conference in Denver as part of our research. That was in April. So we continued on with doing a lot of planning and strategizing long term. And then we discovered a little house that was available for lease starting May 1st. So that was about 4 weeks ago that we found the place for lease. And we snatched it up and started recruiting volunteers and members. And we incorporated as a nonprofit. And now we have 49 Alaska Writing Center, and also the house, which we now call Raven Place, which is our biggest fundraiser because we're using it as a guest house, a vacation rental spot in the summer when we don't run writing programs, hoping to make most of our rent for the winter when we do run writing programs statewide.
So your online courtship led to an online marriage here.
Indeed.
Yes. So what kind of programs are you thinking of doing? What drove you to do this? What is it? What's the plan?
Excellent question. We started out, actually, in January of this year, we started teaching workshops together. We had done a lot of writing instruction separately, but we got a grant from the Alaska State Council on the Arts and taught our first workshop jointly. And then I also taught another one just a few weeks ago, actually. So we have an instructional program lined up. We've got about, I believe, six classes in Anchorage that we have scheduled for fall. And then we'll have more in the spring, of course. We also have a retreat scheduled at Tutka Bay that we can talk a little bit more about.
Oh, yes. So is this a similar program to the creative writing program at UAA? It's a whole different thing.
Okay, yeah, I'll speak to that. Mm-hmm. We have a great relationship with UAA, especially mm-hmm. just individual relationships with the teachers and the writers there. They're wonderful. Mm-hmm. This is different. A writing center offers programs to the public. They're usually more affordable. You take a class and nothing is graded. There's no issues with credit or anything else. So, it's innovatively structured so that you may have some classes that are one day only, like a one-day clinic, or you may meet for two Saturdays or four nights or six, but it's not the 12-week semester necessarily. It's not always fiction 101, fiction 102.
Right.
So you can focus different lengths of time across the genres. You might have a really focused workshop like POV, point of view. We're just going to do that. Or you might have a fun weekend workshop that's just about screenwriting, or a longer workshop that would involve, you know, critiquing of memoir or something like that. But covering all the genres, different approaches, very interactive as well.
Deb
and I
like
to
make
it fun for people.
You might want to attract people that are at different stages of writing, people that just want to dive into writing, have always kind of flirted with it.
Absolutely. People who maybe have had a dream all their lives of writing something. You know what's interesting with the recession?
Mm-hmm.
The recession has actually prompted more people to take writing classes. We're seeing this as a trend nationwide, and writing centers across the country are just booming right now because people take a step back and they say, is this, you know, maybe this is a time to write about my life or to try to write the novel or to try to write the screenplay, whatever they want to do.
That's because they lost a job, right?
And maybe there's sometimes.
I'm on board now. Maybe I should write.
Sure. And I think whenever there's just big change, I mean, whether it's 9/11 or whether it's a recession, people reconsider their lives and their goals. So you find a lot of people who are ready to come out of the closet and write for the first time. And then you find a complete continuum all the way up to people who already have graduate degrees. Like even in our first workshop that we taught together, we had several students who had MFAs and yet still wanted to come back and take our workshop, which was about voice, which is a difficult concept, voice.
You mean finding your own individual
voice? Finding your own voice in your writing, yes. Mm-hmm. So you would think, well, why would somebody with an MFA come back to take a weekend workshop? Well, there's this lifelong learning process with writing. There's the search for community. There's the search for feedback. Deb and I together, I think we've written maybe more than 20 books together. Yeah, each one of us has written at least 10, I think. But we know what that's like. Each time you're learning something new, you're pushing yourself. And again, you're seeking community as well. Mm-hmm. So we've already seen that we've attracted that complete range of writers to our programs. And we also enjoy interacting and learning with them. I mean, there's a lot of kind of co-teaching, co-learning that happens in these workshops.
Right. And so you have to find time to write your own stuff as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I should emphasize, too, that we're not the only instructors for our instructional program, although we both love to teach and love to write. And a good example of that is Dana Stabenow will be doing – this is a good example also of the sort of short-term learning experiences that Andromeda mentioned. Dana Stabenow is doing a clinic for us on October 13th called How to Promote Your Book in Your Pajamas.
So there's pragmatic stuff here. Yes. Next step after you've written something. You know what's exciting about Dana is I think it's actually now going to be a TV series after all this time. You know, she insisted that it be shot in Alaska.
Yes.
Fantastic. And she waited.
Yes. Yeah, and look, Dana is an example of someone who's, you know, written for a long time, been an active part of our community, and is always trying new things. I mean, look at this branching out to the screen. So those are the kind of writers that we love working with as instructors, as participants, people that are always, you know, ready to try something new.
Yeah, and she's just wonderful anyway. She always reminds me of a grown-up Pippi Longstocking and the hair. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about each of you and what you write and the kind of things you write, as well as then go back to inspiring others to write. So, Deb, tell us about you.
So, I'll start. My first novel came out in 1997. It was called A Distant Enemy. It's a multicultural novel for young adults that's set in southwestern Alaska. And I published a second young adult novel 2 years after that. And then I segued into children's picture books. I've done several of those, a couple of travel guides, a nonfiction book for adults called Picture This Alaska. And my next book comes out next spring. I'm very excited about it. It's called Lucy's Dance. It's from the University of Alaska Press. Next spring, and it's a children's picture book that is illustrated by one of my former high school students and translated into Yupik by one of my very first high school students from back in 1979, John Dabithluk of Nunavichik.
Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. So, and, of course, Andromeda, your work is very famous as well.
Sure. A little on my background. I started out doing a lot of journalism. I used to write for the Anchorage Daily News, and as a freelancer, We Alaskans, a publication that we all miss.
Yes.
So mostly nonfiction in the beginning. I've also written travel and natural history. I did a travel narrative called Searching for Steinbeck's Sea of Cortez. I do books on Alaska public lands frequently for Alaska Geographic. So I've written about Kenai Fjords and Denali, have a book about the Tongass coming out soon, have a book about Katmai that I'm working on now. So that's my ongoing nonfiction work. My passion is really fiction. So my first novel, The Spanish Bow, came out a few years ago, and that was a novel about classical musicians in Europe and the interactions between politics and music and the arts. And then more recently, I did a research trip to Italy with help from the Rasmussen Foundation to complete my novel, The Discus Thrower, which is a book about the discus thrower statue and takes place in 1938 Italy. It's another historical novel.
No, that is so fascinating. So obviously you love research.
I love research. Yeah. I love that interdisciplinary combining writing with the arts or writing with music.
Dick, you should jump in here.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious. The first novel about music, is it a period piece too?
Yes, it spans from 1890s to 1940 in Europe.
Really?
And the main character is a cellist in Spain, whose rising fame puts him into conflict with the political figures, you know, Franco and Hitler. And
do you ever consider writing plays?
You're writing about Casals.
Thank you very much. Oh. You recognize it was inspired by the life of Pablo Casals. Uh-huh. And so originally, I actually went to Puerto Rico, where Pablo Casals spent the end of his life.
Yes.
And did research there at his archives and visited his home and talked to people who had studied with him. Originally, it was meant to be a nonfiction book. And then as I started reading more about the period, it turned into fiction. I wanted to be able to include the stories and the questions of that whole time period, what artists were going through, what musicians were going through. So it expanded.
He lived to be quite an old age, though, didn't he?
He did. Yes, he did.
So his memory would be vast, particularly that period.
Yes, and I mean, Pablo Casals was dead when I started doing my research, but still, there were students or students of students who are interested in talking about him.
Do you ever consider writing plays?
That's a good question. I've actually gone more the screenwriting route in the last year. I did a little bit of screenwriting work for hire, and I'm still interested in that.
Well, yeah, things can have this whole journey from a newspaper article to novel to screenplay.
Tell us more about your other book, too. Yeah. The other book, too.
The Discus Thrower.
Yeah, give us more than just a thumbnail.
Sure. I usually have a germ of an idea, and then it just kind of takes off. So I think at some point I saw the photograph of this famous Discus Thrower statue, and then I heard that Hitler bought it in 1938. And not only that he bought it, but that he was obsessed with it, that he paid a lot of money, that he bought it against the objections of the Italian government. So the question for me, looking at the statue, just as it was listening to music in that Spanish Bow book, the question was, what is so great about this statue that someone would feel they have to have it, that it would change the history of Germany? What was going on here? And then as I did research, it brought me into that European question of most of these European powers felt if they could control the arts, they could control the politics. Mm. So this statue came to represent a lot of things, like the perfect body, what the perfect German would look like, which takes us into eugenics and takes us into all
these
other areas.
Fascinating, it really is. And I also noticed that it's being translated into many languages.
So. The Spanish Bow was translated, my bio is a little out of date, it translated into 11 languages.
11.
It just came out in China about 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yes.
You get to go on a book signing tour.
No, I haven't planned that, but if someone wants to invite me from China, that would be fun. And the Discus Thrower, again, because these books take place in Europe, I tend to have European readers as well as American readers. Spanish Bow actually did fairly well in Germany. Germans were very interested in it, so we'll see
if
the next one.
Do you have the same publisher or different publisher?
I have no publisher yet for the Discus Thrower. It's actually on submission right now.
So how does that work, you guys, if you have written something, and even if you, and especially if you have a reputation already or don't, how does that work?
Well, that's an excellent question, and one I think that is another example of why a writing center is so nice to have, because a lot of writers have that question, how do I get published, and how does it work, and do you always have the same publisher, and so on. It depends on whether you have an agent or not. Most writers today do have agents partly because Alaska is a long way from New York, but also just that's mainly how the publishing industry works. At the same time, there are a lot of fine regional and smaller independent presses that will look at manuscripts directly without an agent. So it's really nice. Sometimes things just seem like they're meant to be. Andromeda and I think, bring to between us a really wide range of experience in terms of the mechanics of publishing, too. I've published in New York without an agent because I published for young adults. So that was an area that 10 years ago you could get published without an agent. And it was the kind of connection that we sort of inspire at the Writing Center among colleagues that led me to my editor in New York without an agent. So I know about that way of getting in the door of publishing. I've worked with regional presses, Sasquatch out of Seattle, as I think Andromeda has published there as well,
right.
And now the University of Alaska Press. So the answer to your question is your agent may take you from one publisher to another if that's in everybody's best interest. Your agent may keep you with the same publisher. Of course, the idea of having an agent, I'm sure as in film and so on, is that you want to, you know, be the best advocate for the writer, and the agent then, because they work on commission, benefits from that advocacy as well.
There's such a revolution going on, though, in publishing today. I mean, do you need a middleman? Can you skip that for electronic books and stuff?
Well, I don't know that you can skip. You're absolutely right. And there is a huge revolution going on in publishing, and no one knows how that's going to play out. So it's very interesting to follow. It's very easy to self-publish these days. And e-books make it even that much easier to self-publish, you know, than when you were stuck with hard copies. Of course, the question is, and this dovetails right back into the Writing Center, is your writing good enough? If you cut out all the middlemen, you know, your agent, your editor, all those gatekeepers, if you cut those all out, is your product really something that you're going to feel good about on the market? So again, I think that need for instruction, approachable, affordable instruction for writers is just that much more as the industry changes.
That's a really good point. And so you guys said you were writing blogs and just happened to discover each other's blogs.
Yes.
And then how did that point of merger and inspiration to go even further as a partnership happen?
I think what we had in common was that, you know, when I first heard the term blogging, it was the farthest thing from what I wanted to do. I thought blogging, I thought navel gazing, and I thought self-promotion, and yet for various reasons, I decided to try it a little bit. What I really wanted to use blogging for was to help Alaska writers, to promote reading and writing in Alaska literature in general. And I think what I discovered when Deb and I discovered each other, I think we were doing it for the same reason. We were not doing it just to talk about ourselves. In fact, we were trying to involve as many other people as possible. And so she and I were both following the same model of using the blog to interview people, to interview writers and editors and agents, and then to invite other Alaska writers to guest post. So I think since we came together, we've had about 700 blog posts, because we do this on a daily basis, except for weekends, about 700 different posts. And I'm not sure of the total number, but dozens and dozens of guest authors being interviewed or coming on and doing their own writing, online book discussions, other kind of special online events. So really, it was this larger cause of promoting Alaska books and writing.
And so people can post or contact you via your blog?
They do. Every week they come to us and they submit guest postings. You want to say anything more about that, Deb?
Sure. We have a new website under construction, but it's not quite ready to go public with yet. But people can go to 49writers.blogspot.com. And what they'll see there, as Andromeda mentioned, are daily posts Monday through Friday. They'll see that we have monthly featured authors. This month, for instance, we have Heather Lindy, who also did a reading for us just a couple of days ago at our new Writing Center facility here in Anchorage. I think as a couple of our watchwords that we've had since the first time we corresponded and talked to each other about what were then our separate blogs, were that we wanted to be inclusive. We wanted to include everybody from the beginning writer who maybe never intended to publish anything but just wanted to get a memoir down for family reasons or write some poetry because they loved it, up through the folks with MFAs who maybe had published. We wanted to try to create a community that made that happen. And we also wanted to make that community very accessible, to not charge to be part of it. Although we do have a membership option now with the Writing Center, obviously we have rent now and we have other expenses we need to meet. But people can still access our blog and become part of our community without ever joining anything.
But that's how they would find out about the Writing Center and Raven Place?
Yes, that's the best place to keep in touch there. And there is a button on the sidebar if they want to have the blog emailed to them every time it's updated. That's a nice way
and
to stay informed.
Day, you said.
It's every day, Monday through Friday.
That's great.
And on Friday, one thing that Deb's taken on, and it's a huge job, but I love it as a reader, is she does a weekly roundup each Friday that has news about Alaska writers and books, opportunities, grant deadlines, all sorts of things. That's a resource right there. It comes out every Friday on the blog at 49writers.blogspot.com. And that's the sort of thing that when I started out as a writer in Alaska, which would be 15 years ago that I moved here, that I needed. I needed that information. How do I break in? How do I, you know, what events are going on? I know we have the newspaper. We have some other publications. But having that really good synthesis of everything going on in the writing community would have helped me 15 years ago. So I'm glad that Deb puts that together every Friday.
And we'd like to encourage listeners to send us information, mm-hmm. everything from plays that are going on to, you know, anything that's remotely connected with the writing world in Alaska. We want to get that out there so that people know about it. And it's all free. I mean, we volunteer our time to because we want to give back to the Alaska community that supported us when we were starting out.
And we know it's thriving. Even some years ago, there was an Alaskan literary map, but there were quite a few names on it then. But yes. Now they'd probably have to do a new one.
I think it is time to do a new one. Mm. There has been just a huge explosion at every level. I think we have more writers per capita than most states, and I'm really proud to be part of this Alaska writing community.
That's great. So you guys came to Alaska from somewhere else. What made you, the adventure of Alaska, speak to you?
Well, I'll start first because I think I got here first. I came in 1979 as a teacher, mm-hmm. and I taught in Nunapacheq, Tuluksac, and Akichek. Then I moved into Bethel and taught with the University of Alaska Kuskokwim campus there for 5 years, and then went up to Fairbanks and finished out my 20-year teaching career up there. So it's been a wonderful ride. This is, I think I qualify for pioneer status this year. I need to get my application in.
Yeah, and I had one of those typical Alaska stories of coming here thinking it would be 2 years looking for adventure, looking for a beautiful place. My husband and I are originally from the Chicago area, but we'd gone to graduate school in Nova Scotia, Canada, which was a gorgeous place. Ooh, we lived in a little fishing village of 300 people. Absolutely loved it, but that was temporary. And then looking at the map of North America saying, well, what's going to compete with that? The only place we could find was Alaska. So without having ever seen Alaska, we loaded up the U-Haul with the dog and the baby and drove up here in winter, and that was about 15 years ago. And I will add that Deb being having lived in Fairbanks, that was one of the first things that we noticed. I didn't really know Deb and her work, and we have this kind of Fairbanks-Anchorage divide a little bit where we don't get to interact with each other mm-hmm. as much as we would like to. So I was excited in meeting Deb that she was not from Anchorage, that she knew this different circle of writers and had different experiences, so that's great. And through the blog and through the Emerging Writing Center, we have a lot of connections with Alaskans from across the state. I mean, we had, having just had this membership drive and fundraiser, we had donations from down to Ketchikan, and we have a volunteer all the way up in Barrow. And we're really looking for that statewide vision of getting people involved. Luckily, with online, it's possible to involve people, even in the planning of a writing center, regardless of where they live.
I'll add to that. We have, I think, about 200 and at least 250, maybe 260 people on our email list. People can go to the blog and ask to be added to our email list. But it's a pretty hefty group of writers and supporters of writing within the state. And likewise, you mentioned volunteers and members. We've just had a great outpouring of support, and including, as I said, you know, we now have some financial needs, but we've had donors from $30 up to $5,000, and we're very humbled and honored by that kind of support and faith and trust in our endeavor.
Yeah, it sounds like a powerful connecting force. And I think the other thing is writers are generous to each other, don't you think? They want to encourage each other.
Yeah, very generous spirit among writers, and I think that's one of the things that we really want to formally foster and you know, make a venue where that can continue to happen.
Because it's an isolated profession there. It's just
exactly.
You and your work and your imagination.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting paradox that many of us, I know myself as a writer, I see myself as more of a loner.
Mm-hmm.
But that can result in, you know, over the course of many years, there's kind of this gap in your life of wanting to be part of something bigger than what you're doing. And so when we had our volunteer call 3 weeks ago, because we had to put in a lot of time getting this physical facility, Raven Place, set up, I thought maybe we'd get, you know, 10 or 15 volunteers. We got about 30 volunteers, and we had people putting in, I added up an estimate of about 500 hours.
Marvelous.
And what was great was it was not just the usual suspects. I mean, many of the people were people I'd never met, never heard of, and they come out to the house, and they put in all these hard hours of constructing things and cleaning toilets, and then you find out the kind of writing they do, interesting stories. So bringing together people that you wouldn't have met otherwise. But you're right. Writers do need that sense of community. They long for it.
I think you're right. And also about Why don't we talk a little bit about, or tell us about the physical facility itself. You guys have just been renovating it, so what's it look like? What's it feel like?
Well, we think it looks beautiful, of course, but we're a little biased. We're the proud parents. It's a little old house right next to Snow City Cafe across from Simon and Seifert's with a little postage stamp view of the inlet. Mm. And if I can put in a plug, we are taking reservations for rentals this summer. It is our biggest fundraiser. So one of the biggest things that the arts community can do to help us out is to spread the word about that this summer. It's very reasonable. It's $149 a night, which for summer room rates in Anchorage is great. And we've got it all spit and polished. I mean, it really is looking very nice.
So how many rooms have you got there?
Well, that's a complicated story. But for this summer, we're renting out the main level. In October, we'll have the whole house. And as needed, we'll continue to rent it out through the winter. Obviously, we'd like to reach the point where we can use it as a writing center, certainly from October through April. But if we're short on funds, we'll have to do rentals this winter as well, and we're prepared to do that. I mean, we see this as our way of self-supporting and not, waiting around for 5 or 10 years and hoping we can get some, grants. We'd still love grants. We'd still love private sponsors and private donors.
But this is very pragmatic of
you. But we're
you.
Trying to be very pragmatic. Mm-hmm. I have about 14 years of guest house experience running bed and breakfast and a vacation rental. So I felt confident about the logistics of going into this, but the community can really help to support us. We're coming in a little late for the tourist season. It would have been ideal to have started advertising in January. That being said, we're still getting, some reservations already coming in. And I talked to a woman yesterday, and it's fun. I've talked to a couple of people like this who booked for a couple of nights and said, "I'm so excited. I lived in Anchorage 20 years ago. I remember this little house." And those are the renters we really enjoy. And a lot of people who are contacting us and saying, we see you support writers. We love that mission. I love to read. We have a book nook in the house where we'll have autographed copies of books from Alaskan authors that people can browse and purchase as well. So, and we'll be doing we're planning First Friday book signings, probably starting in July on the porch, because we're right next to some galleries there.
That's
on the West End.
That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, if anyone's looking for a rental, just to describe the experience of renting this little place, mm-hmm. You could fit 2 to 4 people. There's a bed, and then there's an extra fold-out couch, a living room area, a nice kitchen, a little porch. But in addition to that, you could go out the door and you're right next to Snow City. So you can come out in the morning, go have one of the best breakfasts in town. You can go right down the hill and beyond the coastal trail, have dinner at Simon and Seifert's. If I were looking to rent a place in downtown Anchorage, I probably will rent it for myself as a writer's retreat, because I do that. As a writer, and now we're going back to what it's like to have a writing life, I will, each year, I usually look to get away a couple nights. And I've done anything from a little motel down the Kenai
Peninsula. Oh, you kiss your children and your husband goodbye.
I absolutely do. This is
laptop.
How I leave the family behind. Yeah. And I, bring a bottle of red wine and I order some pizzas and I lock myself in a room for 3 days and try to do some revision without interruption. And that's how I'll probably be using Raven Place as a renter myself. As a paying renter myself, I'll do that a couple times this year.
So pizza's good for writing?
Anything
you better than Chinese food?
Chinese would be great. Snow City, anything you don't have to cook yourself.
Exactly.
Just go into that zone and work for 12 or 16 hours and not be bothered.
Do you work with music? Because you were mentioning earlier that was key to one of your books.
I do. I listen to music constantly. Mm. I look at images of art.
I'm so glad you came and told us about this today. And just one more quick question. Can people rent this by the weekly, monthly, particularly in winter times, maybe?
Absolutely. Probably not monthly in the winter because we'll be running some programs. Remember,
true,
we're going to have classes,
true,
workshops, et cetera, there. But daily, we do have daily, weekly, and monthly rates. The easiest place to find out about it is to go to our blog, mm-hmm. 49writers.blogspot.com. You'll see right on the top sidebar a little picture of the house. You click on that picture, it'll take you to all the rental information, and you can book online.
Right, 49 Alaska Writing Center, and of course named after Alaska being the 49th state. So thank you both again. It's been a pleasure. And
thank you.
On this enterprise. And join us again next month for another edition of Alaska Radio Reader Rambler.